Okay, everybody, workday is over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Looks like what was reported last week during the ACC network coverage of NC State's spring game, the NC State Board of Trustees has officially extended head football coach Dave Doran's contract through 2025. Doran is entering his ninth season as the NC State head coach. He ranks second in NC State history in wins. He's also the third longest tenured football coach in the ACC, which, wow, very volatile market. And it also ranks 15th nationally. Another wow, because for a while there, NC State was cycling through coaches every 5 to 6 years. So I've maintained this with Dave Doran going back to a couple seasons ago. Churning through coaches is not ideal. And if you can work with a young coach, and relatively speaking, Dave Doran is a younger coach in the college football ranks. He's not even 50 yet. And surround him with a good staff, allow him to evolve and grow, then maybe there's something there. You can have some consistency. You can consistently win 7 to 8 times a year. And maybe this is just another vote of confidence from Boo Corrigan, the relatively new AD at NC State, to extend that out and keep the assistants in line as well for continuity. Also put some investment in recruiting. I know that's something that Wes Durham talked to us about on Wednesday from the ACC Network. It goes beyond just a contract extension financially for Dave Doran. It also comes in terms of support to keep up to date on recruiting. All those snazzy videos and all those things that you see on the social media, that it's important for recruiting. So it looks like it's just a pure investment into Doran going forward.
Yeah, the real danger year for Dave was 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I know people were confused about 2019. I mean, he had one bad year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were 4-8. They were bad, don't get me wrong. I mean, they were 1-7 in the league, but he wasn't getting fired in 2019. 2016 was the year that he was truly in danger. They end up going to Carolina and winning there, Joe. And really, the program has been on a path, save for that 2019 season, that you would want to see the program to be on with Dave Doran. And now, since you can point to those recruiting classes in 17 and 18, you know, those are the 2 years, remember, that they had all the NFL players, they won 9 games, they were in contention in the Atlantic Division. You know, those were the two teams, and at that time when he was recruiting in the state of North Carolina, it's those classes that are now going to be third and fourth year players, show. And this has always been a year, 2021, that NC State has circled under Dave Doran.
Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovias. Here's my question. Now that he's got this contract extension, how does that kind of paint the upcoming season for NC State? Because you know how it is. We're going to get into the summer months. We're going to start talking about hot seats and who's on the hot seat. How long does Dave Doran have? Because there's still a good portion of the fan base that does not believe in Dave Doran, despite the fact he's been here for a long time. The biggest knock on Dave Doran seems to be amongst NC State fans, if I can kind of boil it down to its essence, is that there's nothing about the Dave Doran era that has been exciting. There's nothing sexy about it. What's the biggest win, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where's that magical night against Clemson? Where's that magical night against Florida State? Things that Chuck Amato would have when he was the NC State head football coach. Even things.
Biggest win was probably the 2018 draft.
Probably, but do you get hype on draft night at Carter-Finley Stadium?
You might not. But recruits do. That's how you ended up with these guys in the class that they have.
Recruits do. But you and I both know somebody who's a huge NC State fan.
Sure.
He spends a lot of time and effort and money to attend NC State things.
Steve.
You didn't have to call him out.
Oh, okay. My bad.
You didn't have to call him out.
Once succeeded Joe Montana as the coach of the 49ers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. But we'll bring up Steve then. Steve's a hardcore. I'm going to give you Steve as an example of this.
Okay.
Steve's a hardcore State fan, man. He's got his RV. He spends a lot of freaking time.
I think it's parking spot 7.
Yeah, he spends a lot of freaking time invested into NC State football. And despite the fact that NC State's been pretty damn steady under Dave Doran, Basically, what Steve wanted was to have that cigarette after a game. He wanted something so good that he needed a breather, a glass of water, and a cigarette because, damn, that was good. But none of that has occurred under Dave Doran. There's been no Clemson win, field goal posts coming down and then being dragged. As well, I think the urban legend now after 1998, I think when NC State beat Florida State, the urban legend now is I think the field goal post got to the Waffle House on Hillsborough Street.
I believe it actually did. I know it got to the WREL.
Did it actually get to the Waffle House?
We'll have to get to the bottom of that urban legend.
Yeah, I know. For those who might not remember when NC State first beat Florida State, which back in the late 90s, that was a big deal when an ACC team would beat Florida State. I mean, it was a momentous occasion.
Yeah.
So when that Torrey Holt team managed to do it in 1998, they tore down the goalpost and took them out of Carter-Finley Stadium. But again, how far it got is open to some debate. I've always heard the Waffle House. I don't believe that for a second.
Maybe they got on a train.
Yeah, maybe they did. Maybe they did. But that's Dave Doran's biggest problem. There's nothing sexy. But that's okay. Like you said, the program's healthy. They're putting dudes in the pros. They had a consistent they fought. They fought their butts off last year to have a good year.
Yeah, I think this year in particular, you know, you say there's no great sexy moment, but I think this year in particular was his best year in terms of you had all sorts of transition on the coaching staff. I mean, they had two different quarterbacks last year.
Yeah.
They had a new play caller. I mean, they had so many things working against them.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to pull off a 7-3 ACC record, you know, but to your point, are you going home and cheering because you beat Pitt or because you beat Liberty?
No.
Probably not.
Yeah, crushed by Carolina, so that's not going to be anything good.
Right. But you did have a really fairly unbelievable season given all of the things that were working against them. The question now, though, is can you apply all of the things you learned in a pandemic to a, quote, normal season, right?
Well, that remains to be seen. What lessons are you talking about?
Well, there? And here's the one thing that I have loved about Dave Doran. He'll enjoy this. They beat Louisville in 2017, the week after they lost to... It was 2018, excuse me, the week after they lost to Wake Forest. And he put into words my law of the wolf, that they can't handle success for whatever reason at NC State. When they have success, they can't handle it. But when people doubt them, the instant somebody doubts them, that's when you get their best. And I think... last year was another one of those moments where you doubted Dave and you doubted the program and you saw the best in them. So the question is, can you handle people saying nice things about you now this offseason? Granted, not as many people are going to say as many nice things about you as they're saying about Carolina. So maybe that shifts some of the dynamic. But still, overall, there's a positive vibe to the program right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave has said this and enumerated this, that they struggle with that. When there is positivity.
Let's drop some truth bombs.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
End of the week. Things go in one ear out the other, so we got to turn it up a notch. A little outcast, a little flex bomb on you. And a fun game for you to play when you're bored at work. Fire up Google. Type in millennials killed, and then see what the algorithm churns up to complete the sentence. Millennials have killed beer, newspapers, golf, movies, traditional hotels, dinner dates, big houses. I could go on. Rand, are you ashamed with yourself? Look at all the things that you've killed.
I'm sorry.
The story is always the same. If your industry is dying, blame Rand. Their latest victim is live sports on TV. You see, millennial viewing of live television dropped nearly 25% in the third quarter of last year. Compare that same three-month viewing period to 2015, and it's dropped 77% according to Nielsen. If I were to do a dance while wrapping those stats into a TikTok video, I would hashtag it cringe. Hashtag for you page. Hashtag FYP.
Football.
Understandably, this has sports leagues freaked out. Understandably, this is where I get to say, I told you so. For years, I was a bit of an inside joke in Greensboro because I would always ask about TV and was skeptical of the cable bundle and whether it had a future. Jillio, back me up. How many times did John Swafford be like, well, Joe, I don't know. I mean, the cable bundle's always gone up. I don't know what the problem is. We're fine. Wrong! I was assured, no. When millennials get older and they have kids, they'll sign up and settle into more normal consumption habits. Slight problem. Those kids were always going to grow up with on-demand content on their iPads and phones and whatever else. And here we are. Less need for live television. Not to say I told you so, but I told you so.
Truth Bomb.
As a late Gen Xer, allow me to dryly point out, elder millennials are damn near 40 at this point. Consumption habits are what they are. And they shouldn't apologize for it either, because in my opinion, there's another problem. The older generation. That older generation? Boomers. Well, boomers, they basically drank up all the good beer and left that one can of Milwaukee's Best in the fridge for the rest of us. Oh, I'm sorry. That's my Gen X sarcasm coming out again. Instead of creating new fans, leagues decided to squeeze what was left of boomers. This includes broadcasts that are catered to boomers. Don't believe me? Watch the NBA on TNT, where it's old dudes like Shaq and Barkley bitching and moaning about today's game. Do you even like what you watch now? Baseball. God forbid you do something that shows personality, because guess who's gonna get upset? The olds about the unwritten rules. Oh, in the NFL? Well, there's a good chunk of people who were turned off by how they treated Cap. Why'd they treat Cap that way? Because of boomers! But Joe! Leagues and advertisers will always cater to the demographic with the most spending power. Well, between crippling debt and a lack of upward career mobility, thanks in large part to the decisions made by the older generation, there's no money left for the rest of us! Okay, boomer?
Sorry, I'm doing a double take at my phone right now because news came out that North Carolina got themselves a transfer. Looks like new head coach Hubert Davis is understandably active because the roster needs some bodies at North Carolina. And apparently they're going to get 6'9 Oklahoma forward Brady Manick, or Manick, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. Either way, the reason why I'm doing a double take on my phone is because the dude looks like Larry Bird. And I'm not just saying that because he's a white basketball player. He looks like Larry Bird. He has the mustache and everything. It's hilarious. I think Carolina just found their new favorite basketball player. But Monty Jones, ESPN, Right Time is the podcast. Highly Questionable is the show. Joining us on the Heister Automotive Group hotline. Bo, what's up, man?
Brady Manick.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Oh, I do see this picture. I see what you're talking. Whoa! Are we sure that's not an artist rendering?
That's the dude. He looks just like
I know Larry Bird. Here's the thing. I'm looking at other pictures where he doesn't look like Larry Bird. Okay, I think the picture that you're looking at, as I look at it, they made him look like Larry Bird.
Are you sure?
I am almost positive. I am going to try to send you this picture.
Right. Okay.
When he first started at Oklahoma, he did really resemble him, but he has changed his look some.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Joe. But when I send this to the both of you, Jilly, I'm assuming you still got the same phone number.
Yeah.
So I'll send it to you too. I think when you see this, you'll be like, oh, okay, I see what's going on.
All right.
Because I'll be honest with you, them was fighting words that you started with. I look like Larry Bird.
Well, these pictures
he did grow a wispy mustache.
Out to Ross Martin over at Inside Carolina, because he tweeted out the news and he put together these early photos of Brady from Oklahoma. I'm like, come on, are these photoshops? But no,
check this picture I'm talking about.
All right,
check your phone right now. I think this is the picture that you saw, because I was like, oh my god, he looks just like Larry Bird.
It
looks just like Larry Bird.
I think that has to be a rendering. That picture you just sent me has to be a render.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I figure you might have seen that, because I saw the other ones, and maybe he looked a little Larry Birdie, but like not he like for real. I show up over there, man.
That's my guy John just points out. He looks like he plays bass for Earth, Wind, and Fire on a cover band. A little bit.
Okay, that last part matters.
The cover band.
That last part matters. I don't know. If you've ever seen the actual bass player from Earth, Wind, and Fire, the most irreplaceable member, dude, they ain't switching him out for no dude that looks like no damn Larry Bird.
No.
Tell you that right now.
So now that he's at Carolina, I guess when he graduates, he'll be able to cash in on old name, image, and likeness.
Ah, well played.
See, now he can sell what he wants. This is something that North Carolina announced this week. Athletics Director Bubba Cunningham did a video and he explained what's going on. Essentially, if you're a former basketball player at North Carolina, I think soccer as well, you can opt into this group licensing deal. And again, former player. So hypothetically speaking, you're Tyler Hansbrough. You can now get a cut of the jersey sales of that have your name on it. Sean May. Not that he's not getting paid now as an assistant coach on Hubert David's staff, but he'll get something out of those jersey sales for Sean May. I guess it's a step in the right direction, but I got two questions. One, how much is this cut? And two, why do you have to wait until you're a former player?
Yeah, that one gets interesting. I think part of it is that, especially with football, where players have multiple players can wear the same number.
Yeah.
A variable in this that I haven't heard about is, are they putting names on them?
Yeah, no.
The name part seems to matter in being able to do it. You raise a good question. Why can't you do it while you're in? Look, the name, image, and likeness thing to me is like a nice try, everybody. Mm-hmm. Like that's how I feel about it. Is nice try, but it's still an end around to stop the schools from actually coming out of their pockets to do anything for the kids. So I don't ever get charged up about the name, image, and likeness stuff because it still feels like a backdoor or away from fairness.
Well, now they seem to be using this as a recruiting angle, too. Florida State, I think it was Monday, announced some program called Apex. And they specifically say name, image, and likeness, two-hour credit course, utilizing their social media branding that then you can share photos. Basically, we'll help you market yourselves and get you ready for whatever marketplace is going to exist. I mean, Duke's kind of already done this with basketball, but now Florida State's putting a name to it. And I guess this would just be a recruiting angle and maybe getting ready for whatever the NCAA decides to pass whenever they decide to pass it.
This also tells you, by the way, that nothing the NCAA was ever doing about this was on no matter of principle.
No.
Because there would be somebody to opt out. Like, just be like, no, this isn't a thing we're going to do. Because the truth is, ain't a whole lot of money in this for most of these people that we're talking about. Like, if we're going to be honest here, they ain't so much bread in it for most of them. Now, with basketball players like Zion Williamson, who come in as a celebrity type, maybe. Mm-hmm. But like, Cade Cunningham didn't come in as a celebrity, for example. Like, you know, there's not going to be that much dough in it for a lot of people. You would think there'd be at least one school to be like, no, we believe in the principles of amateurism. No, none of them believe in the principles of amateurism. Not a single one.
But Monty Jones, ESPN, joining us here on the OG. And Bo, my big thing about the NCAA is, why do we keep acting like this generation is going to get the car dealership to give them $50,000? Like, why don't they open it up? I saw Central Florida put the players' Instagram and Twitter handles on the back of their jerseys in the spring game. I've been saying, let them crowdsource it, man. Open up a GoFundMe, for goodness sake. And if the guy makes an interception and 1,000 people want to give him $1, let 1,000 people give him $1. I just don't understand why they have this pigeonhole thinking of how players can be compensated.
Well, I do think, though, that not that they really care about these things, but it's really easy for these youngsters to be beholden to the wrong people under these circumstances. Like, you kind of need professionals to help you out to figure out a lot of this and to weed out the bad actors and everything else. And most of these guys aren't going to be worth the money in order to do that, unless it's going to be like some lawyer or some agent who does a group deal for like Blue Steel. Like, it's wild. There will be more of a market for the walk-ons on the basketball team than for like the ninth man.
Actually,
you think about it,
you could make the argument there'd be more of a market for women's basketball players or soccer players. I mean, I think I've seen some studies based on social media reach, because they've had to, I guess, hustle more for social media reach or whatever. There's a little bit more of a built-in market for that. And I think some studies have shown that the women's teams can actually stand to gain some more based on niche marketing.
Yeah, the question then becomes, what exactly are the products that they're going to be selling?
Yeah, that's fair too. That's,
you know,
fair,
like,
too.
That's the thing for me, because it's like, they're not going to be able to get deals for where the real money is for like shoes and equipment.
Sure, right. Could be like that. Could
that's,
be with camps.
That's where I think
I saw.
Yeah,
one
that's
person,
where I think you'll see camps, lessons, yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
They could do that.
But
now,
when are they going to have the time to do these things?
Yeah. Not a lot.
I actually saw with a women's basketball player. There was someone on Twitter had said, I would pay money to watch this particular player, how they put their makeup on so that it lasts during the game. Like, how do they do this? I would watch this tutorial. Like, I think that those are the kind of things.
That's a market. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Those are the kind of things. Like, it's not going to be one person who's like, oh, let me give him $50,000.
Yeah. But Monty Jones.
Now, let me tell you this, though. That women's basketball angle you just spotted out was a fascinating thing, because there is apparently we found an underserved market, which is white women who want to get these tips from black women who have been wearing all these prostheses and all these things under untoward circumstances for a very long time. They're like, how did you keep those eyelashes on? And they're like, oh, come on now. Light work. Light work. Like, that's what I noticed. There was a lot of white women online like, yo, how did you do this? And don't get me wrong, black women were wondering too, but they weren't nearly as amazed. Like, apparently they have seen incredible feats like these much more than their Caucasian sister had.
See, and I was always wondering how LeBron James magically has new hairlines all the time. Like, what's his secret? I'd like to.
Yeah.
How do I cover up my fryer tuck like LeBron manages to do on a consistent basis?
You need to start by getting a better job.
Yeah, yeah. The marginal bucks that I get for a fringe top 40 market sports show just ain't getting it done. But Monty Jones, ESPN, Right Time is the podcast. Highly Questionable is the show. Speaking of the NBA, I mean, didn't we all kind of know how this was going to go in the regular season? Condensed. I mean, this is what the players were warning, but they had to play. I mean, you can't not play, but this condensed schedule with nights off and injuries and slow walking guys back. I mean, what we're seeing right now for a pretty slog of a regular season was to be predicted.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of guys getting hurt. There's no way around this. It's hit them. I think the thing that's really hit, and we feel about this completely differently, if LeBron James and Anthony Davis hadn't gotten hurt, if it was just then we could kind of go. But to me, there's been a lot of really interesting things that happened this season. One, I just don't know why people can't get themselves to embrace that there is no MVP race this year. It's one guy, and it would have been this guy if nobody had gotten hurt, and it's Jokic. Mm-hmm. And it's the wildest thing. Like, I was turning on The Jump today, and it was Richard Jefferson, it was Rachel Nichols, it was Ramona Shelburne, and they had done this interview with Embiid, and they're trying to talk themselves into the idea of Embiid as MVP. It's not his fault he got injured. Like, okay, wow, what a millennial concept that felt like, right? It's not your fault you got hurt, but you did. Jokic is having, like, a top 10, 12 all-time statistical season this year. He is incredible to watch. He is everything. His team is good. All of this stuff. And he's not black. And I'm watching people... white people talk themselves out of the idea as him as MVP, and I just cannot understand it for the life of me. It doesn't make any sense. Like y'all got me out here taking up the charge. And by the way, if you see me taking up this charge for Jokic, this should shut a lot of y'all up now, shouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Your mention should quiet down. Absolutely.
But Monty Jones, ESPN, joining us here on the OG. I think I really do think James Harden had an argument until he got hurt.
He did have an argument, but this is just really pointing out how much of MVP is just the story
that
we like.
Yeah, that's true.
And not like Russell Westbrook had back-to-back seasons with triple doubles. He may have done three in a row. Only one of them was the MVP, and only one of them did we think about it, because only one of them came with him having a really cool story. Like, right. That was the only one. Harden has one because we thought that he had just become a black hole for life, and then he was like, no, I actually still can do all these other things. Okay, cool. But I know, like, I'm not a person that leans but so far on advanced metrics when I'm talking about, like, evaluating basketball. But the ones that sync up with winning the MVP, Jokic is out here looking like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Mm-hmm. Like it's not even close. And it's also would be different if he wasn't fun to watch. It is incredible watching them play.
Well, Monty Jones, ESPN, Right Time is the podcast. Highly Questionable is the show. Sticking with the NBA, I'm of the belief that there's only one team capable of flipping the switch in the playoffs, and it's the team that happens to have LeBron James on it, okay?
Yes.
We saw the Clippers try to do that with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. That ended terribly. And I think Paul George is not going to be able to live down what he said after they got beat in the playoffs. And now we're seeing this with the Brooklyn Nets, where people have just assumed, hey, look, everything's fine. Yeah, they weren't playing defense when they were healthy. Yeah, they've got some injuries. Yeah, Kyrie Irving has been taking his PTO days. But once they get to the playoffs, man, this is the team to beat. I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily buy that because of that simple premise. They don't have LeBron James.
So I don't think it's even a matter of just that they don't have LeBron James, that they haven't won a championship before. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a team. My buddy Nick Wright always made this point about the Clippers last year repeatedly and was vindicated.
Yeah.
Name a team that's been able to do that. We just hit the switch, but had not won a championship prior to that. You probably can't. I can't name the team that has ever done that. And the Nets don't play defense. Like, teams are going to be able to score on them in the playoffs. I don't know why people are so – I mean, I guess I do understand to a degree why people are so confident because of the three guys they have at the top of the roster, and that was kind of the lesson that you learned from the Miami teams was that, except the difference was those dudes came in there and all three of them were first-team all-defense caliber defensive players.
Yeah.
The Nets have – I mean, their best defensive player is Joe Harris, who is a legitimately good defensive player, but he ain't your best defensive player, well, not if you're really trying to win.
Gilio's convinced they just don't know how. It's not a matter of do they. It's they don't know how.
They were switching on everything in that Lakers game without LeBron and AD. And I was like, why are you doing this? Because Kyrie, everyone, they were just abusing Kyrie.
Well, who are the two guys in charge of this team?
That's what I said. Mike D'Antoni and Steve Nash.
Yeah, but like, which one
of the operation is Mike D'Antoni?
Yeah, like which one of them knows a damn thing about playing defense? There's that. The other part, and this is Kevin Durant is 33 years old coming off a torn Achilles.
He's not the same guy.
Yeah, he's a versatile defender. Like, you can put him in a lot of different places, but I don't know who he's actually supposed to play defense against.
Joining us on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline now is Duke's Nolan Smith, who was promoted yesterday to the position of assistant coach. Nolan, how are you? Congratulations.
I'm doing great. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on. I think in the previous iteration of the show, Adam Gold and I caught up with you at a Final Four. The year escapes me, but I know you pulled up to our Radio Row spot, and you're in the convention center and things like that.
Yep.
This is, you know, coaching, because when you walk around those conventions, man, you know how it is. Everybody's got their polos on. They got a resume. They're looking for jobs and things like that. So for you, when did this kind of start for you to kind of get on this path to where you are today to be an assistant coach now with Duke?
I think it's always been in my plans. Honestly, I wanted to play for a long time and have a professional career, but due to injuries, it came earlier. And I think I was fortunate enough to choose the right school and the right coach that that I knew was going to take care of me. And we built a great relationship over my 4 years at Duke, and then as soon as I had my injury in 2015, Coach K was really the first person to call me and say, hey, come back down here, train. And then when I injured it again, he said, hey, look, we have a spot for you. He's like, what do you want to do? So therefore, I was able to get right into the coaching side pretty quickly, from my playing career.
Nolan Smith, Duke assistant basketball coach, joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. Nolan, the game of college basketball is changing on us, and you've seen that firsthand from your teams, when you were playing to now. How has Mike Krzyzewski changed with the game?
He's been a chameleon when it comes to the changing with the game of basketball. It's pretty incredible if you ask me, for a 74-year-old man, a legendary coach, to change his ways. And for the game to ask him to change his ways and he actually respond to it is incredible. I think it's one of the greatest things I've been able to see him do is, adapt to the generation, adapt to the times, and be okay with that. Not be too stuck in his ways or, too into himself to say, I'm not changing. I'm Coach K. I'm going to stick to the way I've done things with the 91-92 team or the 2001 team. No, the 2015 team was different than the 2010 team, and all the teams we've had since have been different, and that's because he adapts with each team.
Nolan Smith joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. He was promoted to the position of assistant coach yesterday with Duke basketball. So what does this mean for you now? I mean, you're always going to be the best dressed on the sideline. I know that. But what does this mean for you now? You've been a part of the program, but now as assistant coach, how's this role change for you?
Oh, it changes a lot. I'm just obviously extremely excited to finally be on the court and work with the guys. And, obviously I've been off the court and been able to just be around these great players and help, mold them into the, men that they're ultimately going to become. But now I get to do it on the basketball side. And that's always been my biggest dream, is just to give back the knowledge that I've been blessed to have received from so many different players and people that I've come across in my basketball life. Now I get to pass that gift on to these players, and it's absolutely, amazing and an honor to do it at my alma mater, Duke.
Nolan Smith joining us here on the OG. And Nolan, you've been so involved in the last 13 months in social justice activism, and I'm curious, how do you keep your head straight given the events of the last week in Chicago and Minnesota with Adam Toledo and Dante Wright?
Yeah, no, it's extremely hard. It really is. And you know, when you're constantly seeing things go on in our country that are just straight up wrong, and you know that there's two different Americas that we're living in. It's tough. And you know, but as a role model and a teacher for our players, you know, just continue to be there for them and have constant conversations. And, you know, just make sure that they're aware and know the biggest conversation I think we can have as coaches is, you know, what happens when you do get pulled over? You know, that's kind of what we have continuous conversations with our guys about just that part of everything that's going on, and just to make sure that they get home, you know, make sure they get home and they do whatever they have to do to to get out of whatever situation they may be in. Those are the hard conversations that we have to have. And it's sad that we have to have them, but we do.
No. What sort of pushback have you received potentially from the Duke fan base? We saw it with the Wake Forest women's basketball program. I don't know if you've been keeping up with this story, but they were some of their funding was basically threatened by boosters. I'm curious if you've heard anything. Obviously, you have Mike Krzyzewski as a great advocate, but I'm curious if you've heard any kind of pushback for some of the issues that you've tried to tackle in your time there in the last 13 months.
Yeah, I've received emails, and I've tried to have some calls come my way from different boosters and, you know, whatever, Iron Dukes is what they're called. And you're going to have some upset people that just don't understand and don't care to listen and think that everybody's just complaining and upset or, you know, whatever their clouded mind might have in it. But for the most part, like you said, having Coach K as a strong ally and a strong voice backing me, supporting me, pushing the work that I'm doing in the Durham community, and everything publicly, that helps kill the noise, which is why you need strong allies, you know, supporting the cause, supporting what people are upset about. You know, that helps limit those upset people. And I think, thankfully, Duke has been an amazing place as far as, you know, asking for change, being open to listening for change. So I think Duke University would not allow anything like that to go on, and thankfully I haven't seen anything. So Coach continues to encourage me to use my platform and continue doing the work.
Yeah, and they've used that platform, the social media platform. I know that you had a series of speaking engagements on campus and around Durham, and we'll close on this. I'm assuming that those community engagements will continue even with this new role, right?
Absolutely. It'll definitely continue. Because that's part of coaching. You know, some people may think, oh, you're just a basketball coach, you know, and that's the narrative that they want to push. Oh, you're just a basketball coach, so just coach basketball. But really, you are a teacher. You are a role model. There are people that are going to look up to you, and you just so happen to have a platform. So why should you just talk about basketball when you can help mold a young mind and make them a powerful young man or a powerful young woman? That's what coaches are. They're teachers. So I'm always going to continue to teach. Especially when it's for the right.
Nolan Smith, he is a new assistant coach for Duke men's basketball. Hey, man, congratulations, and hopefully it'll be a normal-ish basketball season once we get to the fall.
We hope so. Thank you all so much for having me.
Now, last night before the game, the Carolina Hurricanes and their fantastic social media department put out a video of Jordan Martinook, who's like their energy guy, the personality behind the scenes. He does this thing before every game. So he yells, he makes a bunch of weird noises, and then he goes to Andrei Svechnikov, the young gun. He goes, Mr. Svechnikov!
Is he Edith?
I don't even know. So here's the clip last night of the Canes social media crew putting out that video of Martinook doing the Mr. Svechnikov thing. And then listen for another name that pops up.
Come on, my sugar boo.
Now that sounded like Andrei Svechnikov to me. That sounded like Svech.
Come on, my sugar boo.
That sounds like Svech. Mike Solarte, our old colleague from the Triangle, now with News for was Spectrum News. He asked Svech about the Sugar Boot comment. Here's Svechnikov after the game.
Andre, the question, the answer that everybody's looking for is, how did Marty Natchez end up with the nickname Sugar Boo, as you called him before you guys went out for warm-ups?
Sugar Boo. I never called him like that.
Well, then you've got a doppelganger with the voice, because somebody called him Sugar Boo, and it was attributed to you.
Oh, really? I don't think so. I usually call him Young Legs, so just like that.
Young Lex? Young Legs?
Young Legs, I think.
Well, I mean, he did show off those legs on Instagram. Hmm. The Canes tried to get to the bottom of it. They said it was Brett Pesce. Gold apparently texted Pesce. Pesce denied it.
Hmm.
And then Gold actually talked to Jordan Stahl earlier today. You can listen to Adam Noon to 3 here on The Fan. He asked the captain who said Sugar Boo. Here's Stahl's response.
I'm not in that hallway. Those guys are just yelling nonsense for about a good 2 or 3 minutes. But you go ahead and play.
All right, we'll see who it is. Let's see who it is.
Come on, baby.
Come on, my Sugar Boo.
Yeah. All right. Who do you think that is?
You can't beat that deep voice. It's got to be Svechy. Yeah.
See?
That's my guess. But.
Svech says no. I think it was Pesce.
Pesce?
I think it was Pesce.
One more time.
One more time.
Come on, my Sugar Boo.
That's Svechy for sure.
All right. That's the cap. I'm going to take the captain's word. He knows Svech's voice. That's got to be him.
Did he say Pesce or Svechy?
At first, he's, you mean at the end?
When he says that's blah, 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 for sure.
That's Svechy for sure.
Yeah, I think it's Svechy.
Svechy. No. You got to remember, Joe, we are talking about hockey players.
Right.
He'll never say Svech or Svechnikov. It's Svechy.
No, I know that part, but what do they call it?
That's Svechy for sure.
Yeah, Svechy.
I think it's Svechy.
Svechy.
See, I heard Nino on social media too, so I don't know.
Who knows who it is? I'll talk to Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, ESPN.com. Greg, how are you?
Reading contracts is horrible, says somebody who's trying to buy a house in this market. It's not a good time.
No.
Nobody should ever want to read a contract.
No, either that or you marry a lawyer, and then they can just go over the quick bits like I do. So that's always helpful.
Yeah, I mean, that's really when you know you've made it, is when you can live your life as you choose. And then someone exponentially more qualified and smarter than you can handle the details. That's the setup we all strive for.
Greg Wyshynski joining us on the Heister Automotive Group hotline. Okay, so we've got some issues with the NHL right now. The latest news is that the Colorado Avalanche have 3 games postponed after a third player has to enter the COVID-19 protocol. You also have the Vancouver Canucks who have, I guess, publicly shamed the NHL into a position where they had to delay their return to action after their locker room has been dealing with COVID-19. What does this mean for the – everybody seems to be asking this question. What does this mean for the playoffs?
Well, it remains to be seen, because the NHL has floated the idea that each division could sort of be on its own schedule for the playoffs. As it stands right now, the North Division standings, the All-Canadian Division, may not be settled until May 19th. I mean, there's an outside shot the Calgary Flames, who are playing the Vancouver Canucks on May 19th because of the rescheduled games in Vancouver, could potentially still be in a playoff race. I mean, they're chasing down Montreal for that last spot. They've got a couple more games against them, so it remains to be seen what happens there. But as of right now, the North Division is playing all the way through May 19th, which is like the last day that the NHL had for this buffer of days after the regular season was supposed to end. So it's stretching it as far as it can go. What it means for the playoffs is a great question. I don't know if they would stagger everything to start at the same time, or it could be a situation where we're gearing up for, like, you know, game two between Carolina and Nashville, and the North Division is just like finishing up the regular season. It's entirely possible.
Well, and I guess that's one thing that I wish we had learned as not just sports media, but also sports fans, where we're not done with this whole pandemic thing, even though everything's trending in the right direction and people are taking their vaccines and everything else. We're not done yet. I think we have to get accustomed to the fact that not everything is going to go according to plan. And I find it surprising that the NHL was trying to rush the Vancouver Canucks. Are you surprised
at how they were trying to get to the, it got to the point where JT Miller has to just publicly say, this is ridiculous, and then they followed suit.
Yeah, and it's not just the NHL. I mean, the NHLPA has to sign off on all of this too, and maybe they didn't realize internally what the Canucks were all thinking, and obviously JT Miller has always been a pretty outspoken dude, so the Canucks knew what they were doing, putting them out front and center to get the message out. And then once that happened, the PA and the team had a Zoom call, and then before you know it, the NHL is you know relaxing the rescheduling of games a bit and trying to work out a better schedule for them to come back. So kudos for them for speaking up. I wish more players would on the record when it comes to their uncomfortability with some of the stuff they're doing for COVID. But, you know, to your point about how we shouldn't forget about the pandemic, it's hard, man. Like, the San Jose Sharks today announced that they're going to have fans back in their building. As of right now, I think every team in the league has some return to fans thing or already has fans in the building, except for Chicago. So, I mean, like you said, everything is trending in a certain direction, and yet we still have this kind of boiling in the background. My take on the Canucks, like I wrote about my ESPN column this week, they've known since the beginning of the season this was a possibility. They've been ready to use points percentage in the standings to seed these teams in case teams, and in some cases, entire divisions didn't get to 56 games. Players around the league knew going into every game they might not play all 56 games. Coaches, I've been told by a couple players, literally in the dressing room before games, hey, don't forget, every game matters because we don't know how many we're playing.
Yeah.
So it's not as if it's a mystery to these guys that certain teams wouldn't be able to answer the bell for a full 56 game season. And the idea that you're going to, you know, have these guys playing, like the Vancouver schedule right now, they're playing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, games in a span of like 7 of a week. It's just, it's insanity. So I don't know. I would just cut it short, do it by points percentage, but I'm sure there's a lot of money on the table in sponsorships and rights fees and everything else that they have to account for. And that's why they're trying to, you know, make the Canucks finish this season.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, ESPN.com, joining us on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. The Carolina Hurricanes already went through a COVID pause, and that made an already condensed schedule more condensed. But the Canes have managed to not just power through that, but also power through a variety of injuries. They didn't have Peter Mrazek for 2 months. Teuvo Teravainen, who helped them really produce points at a pretty great clip early on, has been out with concussions. He's back on the ice now. It looks like he might be coming back here relatively soon. But despite all of that stuff, they've been in this just knockout drag out with the Florida teams. They can't beat Detroit, but against the Florida teams, they're sitting there at the top. Have you been impressed by the way the Canes have been able to handle themselves given some of the injuries, the COVID pause, and everything else?
I have, and you know, obviously getting healthier is going to be good. Reuniting that Aho line is going to be a good thing. I also like the fact that they kept the three-headed Hydra monster goaltending thing together through the trade deadline. I think as you get into the playoffs, one, you want to account for the possibility of somebody getting hurt just because of how truncated the schedule's been and how compressed it's been and everything else. And two, I mean, it's no secret that Carolina doesn't really have a Andre Vasilevsky or a Connor Hellebuck or anybody on that level. They're hoping one of these guys catches fire and they can kind of go through there. So we'll see what happens with it. You know, I did a contender tier ranking in my column this week. I don't have Carolina among the elites. I think there's only 4 elite teams in the league right now, the Lightning when they're healthy, Vegas, Colorado, and I'd put Toronto on that level too. But I saw a lot of people kind of sneaking in Winnipeg as maybe number 5 on that list, and I don't buy it. I think Carolina is clearly number 5 behind those 4 elite tier teams insofar as being a Stanley Cup contender this season, because when they're on, they're really on. And you know, from us talking, you know, over the past year, I'll go to my grave saying they would have beaten Boston in that playoff series if Svechnikov didn't get hurt. I thought they were rolling at that point. And that was just a gut punch for them.
It was. It definitely was. And Svechnikov's been working through whatever he's been working through. He started off hot, went through a little bit of a lull. I know he got into action last night. Before we let you go, though, what is it about the Canes that keeps them, in your opinion, in that tier? Why are they in the tier that they're in?
I think balance. I think you know, when they do suffer injuries, they're able to compensate by getting scoring throughout their lineup and scoring from different places. I think one of the hallmarks of the Rod Brind'Amour teams with the Carolina Hurricanes is their ability to possess the puck it's been their ability to play really solid defense, especially when you look into the analytics and see their, you know, expected goals. It's always quite good. And then obviously offensively, I think they've been very consistent. They're just a good team, man. And they're at a point now where this same group has been doing this together for as long as it has, where you can kind of feel like it's going to all build to something. Mm-hmm. And whether that's a Stanley Cup, I don't know, but they've been through the playoff ringer. They understand what it takes. They're incredibly talented. This is not a team by any stretch that's not in its prime. It's all there. And the trick is obviously, you know, to hopefully get that first seed and get the easiest matchup you can in the first round. But you're going to probably have to go through a Tampa Bay team that, in theory, is going to have a healthy Stamkos and a healthy Kucherov, mm-hmm. and that's the whole ballgame there. You could pass the Tampa Bay team like that, you could easily beat any other team in this league. But, I mean, they've got a real problem in this division being with the Lightning, if the Lightning are healthy and playing up to standard, because that might be the best team in hockey right now.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, ESPN.com, covers the NHL. We appreciate the time. Have fun with that that house contract.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have fun medicating through it, but the contract itself, you know, I can't speak to that.
All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
Take care.
Michael Felder, he eats football tape for Stadium. Check him out. Watch Stadium at In the Bleachers on Twitter. Felder, what's up, man?
Not a thing, man. How are you guys doing?
We're good, although I am curious. Does Trevor Lawrence want it enough? Does the Clemson quarterback want it enough to be drafted number one? Does he want it enough to win a Super Bowl? When you watch Trevor Lawrence tape, does he give you the impression he doesn't want it?
I mean, I don't know if anybody has seen – I assume most people have seen the video of him playing intramural basketball and screaming some, you know, some athlete straight to the ground. I think the kid likes to win.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, his dad said if he doesn't win a Super Bowl, he'll be perfectly cool with that.
I think he's a well-adjusted youth. I think that's kind of important because yeah. We're seeing people – it's – honestly, I've been thinking a lot about this after reading the article, obviously, and thinking about the way that people talk about sports and wanting it and all those things. I think we're living in a time frame where so many people are addicted to the Jordan personality,
mm-hmm.
Even though admitting he was a pretty bad person.
Yeah.
And so many people are addicted and, you know, RIP to the Kobe personality of you have to be maniacal to succeed, and people aren't realizing that currently what we're watching is a class of athletes that do they work harder on their games than people before them ever did? Absolutely. And, you know, with few exceptions, obviously Kobe maybe being an exception, but these guys have been trained their whole lives. They work their whole lives. They recognize also that I'm not in charge of everything. And so if I don't get to the promised land, but I am happy with my career, I'm going to be okay. Hmm. And I don't think that a lot of people can reconcile that because there exists in sports this idea, or there exists with people outside of sports that observe sports, this idea that I would do it for free or I would do it for cheaper. If I had the opportunity, I would kill myself to get a chance to do it.
Michael Felder, In the Bleachers on Twitter, catch his work on Stadium, joining us here on the OG on the Heister Automotive Group hotline. And Michael, why are we holding one bad or average game by Justin Fields against Indiana against him? I'm very confused.
Honestly, I think the reality of it is that people don't – I'm trying to find the correct words to say this, but – I think at the end of the day with Justin Fields in a game that was rough in Indiana, let's mince no words.
They had some dudes.
They had some guys on defense, and they also did some things that are very confusing. And to me, that game is more on his coaching staff than it is on him with respect to Justin Fields. And I look at it on a more grand scheme of things where you look at what they allowed him to do. So they didn't let him make his own decisions routinely at Ohio State. And we saw it in the national championship game as well, right? Where we're looking at a goal-to-go situation for Ohio State against Alabama, and Alabama didn't cover a guy. But because Justin Fields has to get clearance from Ryan Day and that sideline to run a play, he can't just rise and fire straight to the wide-open guy to go score six. And I think micromanaging is a massive issue in college football overall, and I think Justin Fields is just the most current, I don't know that victim is the right word, but certainly currently the most prominent product of the micromanaging that exists in college football. And to juxtapose that with Trevor Lawrence in 2019, remember when everyone said he regressed because he threw, what, two interceptions against Louisville?
Yeah.
But that was Clemson giving him the offense. You make your mistakes. You make your decisions. We're not here to help you. You think about Joe Burrow in that same 2019 season. He didn't look at Joe Brady for everything all the time. Instead, what he did was get empowered from Sunday to Friday to make decisions on Saturday. And I don't think Justin Fields had that same power. So that's something he's going to have to assume in the NFL, which is going to be interesting. But that same thing goes for Zach Wilson. The same thing goes for Mac Jones. The same thing goes for Trey Lance.
Michael Feltner joining us here on the OG, and that's exactly where I wanted to go, Michael. I'm going to pat myself on the back here. I knew Dwayne Haskins wasn't going to be that good in the NFL, or at least early in the NFL, because he right. really did throw a bunch of screen passes at Ohio State, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But he also played with talented players, certainly compared to the rest of the Big Ten. Are we raising any of these questions with Mac Jones right now, or are we just so in love with how well he played with, let's be honest, he was, you know, so far ahead of everybody else in terms of who he was playing with. I feel like I don't know if there is an exact comparison to Dwayne Haskins and Mac Jones, but I feel like we're not even asking any of those questions about Mac Jones.
I think you got to ask those questions. I think there are two buckets of questions that need to be asked with respect to Mac Jones. Was he made better by the guys he played with? Because let's not forget, we're talking about two first-round wide receivers and Devonta Smith and obviously Jalen Waddle. We're also talking about a fringe first-round, maybe second-round guy in Najee Harris, who I think is probably the best running back to come out in a long time. I like him a lot more than I've liked running, including guys like Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley. I think Najee Harris is better than them. He's like if LaDainian Tomlinson and Adrian Peterson had a baby. Like, this kid is amazing. And so there's that bucket. And then the second bucket is, what can he actually do physically? Physically, what can he do? And I know Kurt Warner did a talk with PFF, and he said he's got quarterback athleticism. And I was like, what about real athleticism? Because that's a thing. And what about real actual arm strength and anticipation and all those things? They're real. I don't trust him nearly as much as Kurt Warner does. And listen, Kurt Warner knows more about playing quarterback than I do, but I know a lot more about college football because I watch more of it. And watching a guy, and this is something, if you're looking into Mac Jones and you're watching Mac Jones, I would say pull up a Jalen Waddle or a Devonta Smith highlight tape, not the Mac Jones highlight. Pull up the wide receiver highlight tape and see how often they have to stop, turn around, and then go make a contested catch, which looks great for them. They're mossing a guy. But because he doesn't have the ability to get the ball out in front of them, what should be a touchdown turns into down inside the 5, down inside the 10, down inside the 20, when they already have their guy beat and stacked by a yard, 2 yard, 3 yards. In the NFL, the windows get smaller. And so you can talk about Mac Jones' processing speed. I think he's probably, in terms of what he was asked to do, I think he's behind Trevor Lawrence. And then we can debate with him, with Fields and Wilson, where it is from in terms of responsibility that he had in that offense. But what we cannot debate is the fact that the windows are smaller in the NFL. Your guy's not going to be open by 5 yards.
Yeah.
And when you underthrow that ball, it's going to be an interception and someone's going to take it away. And that's the thing. That's the question that I have more than anything with Mac Jones. He's great in the locker room. Those guys love him at Alabama. But can he make the throw? And if he can't make the throw, I don't know if he can get on the field.
Michael Felder. In the Bleachers on Twitter, check him out. Watch Stadium. He eats college football tape, and he pairs it with fantastic sides. Before we let you go, we got about
he grows in his garden,
and you grow those sides in your garden. Shout out to the Hand in the Dirt podcast. Real quick, we got about 30 seconds here.
Okay,
I don't want you to tell me what order they're going to go in the draft. I want your quarterback tiers.
Okay, I think there are three first-round quarterbacks. I think there are 2.5 first-round quarterbacks in this draft.
Okay.
Obviously, Lawrence, Fields, and then Wilson, depending on how you feel about him.
All right.
I think that Mac Jones and Trey Lance are going to get screwed by where they are drafted compared to what their production looks like if they don't go into a perfect situation.
Okay.
That's going to be bad. But this is also an NFL draft where we are looking at 15, 17 maybe true first round picks. This isn't, there aren't 32 guys that should go in the first round.
It's a thin draft. It's a thin draft, yeah. And the pandemic has a lot to do with that, but also I think there's a reality here that we're not talking about. It is a thin, we talk about that in the NBA all the time. We're actually seeing that. Yeah. We're seeing that in the NFL this year. All right, man, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you later.
No problem. Thank you so much. You guys take it easy.
Yeah.
It's time for Rand to
acapella the news. All right, Rand, what you got cooked up today?
Well, fellas, we had to figure out the Sugar Boo incident. You know, obviously we talked about it a little bit, but Marty Natchez's new nickname is Sugar Boo. We got to figure out who said it. We think it was Svetch, so we're going to go with that it was Svechnikov. So if it was Svetch, I kind of feel bad for him. You know, he's got Marty... Jordan Martinook, you know, screaming Mr. Svechnikov at him. I don't want him to feel left out because now Natchez has a nickname too. So we wrote a song about him, and shout out to Baby G making the track. Oh yeah. And Gilio, shout out to him. Gotta point to the passer.
I love you and I need you, Svechy, I love you, I do need you.
No matter what I do, all I think about is you. Even when I'm with my sugar boo, Svechy, I'm crazy over you.
We got the center man, he reppin' that 88, and we missin' Turbo, but he and C-Bass looking great, and oh no, my nickname's not the only one, though. But that's okay, cause I'm still in the hall, and I still got my Marty screaming. But after all this time, sure not still what he's meaning.
Very nice.
Was yelling at our other Marty. And that's for sure, cause I call him Young Legs, while others just call him Nacho. Don't matter who, as long as he's scoring goals, though. Tell me, Marty, what's it gonna be? He said, you'll always be our boy, Svechy.
No matter what I do, all I think.
You'll always be our boy, Svechy. Still Mr. Svechnikov.
Well done. Hey, well
thanks,
done.
Thanks. Shout out to Baby G.
Nah, Baby G. Got to get her on some more tracks.
She was pumped.
When she's not producing. That's always good.
She was pumped.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Gilio podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m. And you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.